Politely, she shook it. I'm the technician. My name is Darlene. I'll be conducting your ultrasound today. She squirted a gel on Lucia's belly, pointed to a screen. I can't see anything, I whispered. Wait, said Lucia. The screen flickered like the static on TV. Then some grayish blobs rolled back and forth. And then, there it was. A baby. With a head, nose, toes. It floated and squirmed, bounced and kicked. Then it lay still, curled up like it was lazing in a hammock. I laughed out loud. Mierda! Holy shit! It was real! Darlene showed us its fingers, its spine, its fast-beating heart. Do you want to know the sex? She asked. I looked at Lucia. Yes, we said. It's a girl. You see? Said Lucia, grinning. A girl. My chest swelled. I wanted to tell Mommy. I wanted her to feel proud. I wanted her to tell everyone about her first grandchild. On our way home, Lucia said we should celebrate. We spotted El Pollo Loco by the Ecuadorian buffet. Hola, pollo! Lucia called out. A cardboard sign hung from a string around his neck. 2-for-1 empanadas at Pizza Pal. We slapped him double high fives. Then we went inside, stuffed ourselves with goat stew and plantains. When we'd eaten enough, Lucia announced it was time for peach ice cream and pickles. You're kidding, I said. I'm pregnant, she said. We went inside the Korean grocery next door. She settled for vanilla and kimchi. To the three of us, she said, raising her spoon. Suddenly it seemed very real, very serious. With or without papers, I was bound to this chica by this baby inside her. I tried to stand up straight, and then my words slipped out. Will we need papers? Are you being romantic? She teased. For the baby, I said. For the baby we need a piece of paper? But I knew she understood what I meant. She knew I was always grinding my teeth at night, chewed on the inside of my cheek when I got nervous. A few days later, Mommy called. I told her the news. Dios! How many nights I prayed that you would meet a nice girl, she said. Una China Americana, and now this. I could hear her clapping her hands. You will ask her, won't you? When will you ask her, hijo? In Mommy's eyes, it was our family's ticket, Freddy's ticket, marriage to an Americana. One day, I went to work, and my boss told me to go home. Sorry. I hate to lose you, Manny, he said. But there had been crackdowns. I needed papers. I can't take any more chances, he said. He had a friend who was hiring dishwashers for night shift. Paid a lot less than my old job, but it was a job. I'm sorry, he said again. I knew there was nothing I could say, so I said, sure. Mrs. G said she'd hook me up with her son-in-law, Maurice, who worked construction. I tell him you're a good worker, strong, good body. I rolled up my sleeve, flexed my bicep. She tapped it with the end of her broom. You like Maurice. He's a good guy. You hear about that maniático burning down that candy store in Tarrytown? People are crazy. She coughed. I'd seen it on the news. Boss and I worked on that place last summer, painted it orange and white. A big gumball machine on the back wall. Mindy Griffin said the arsonist poured gasoline on old tires, set them on fire, smashed them through the shop's front window. Maurice picked me up in a pickup truck, typical Americano, with his buzz cut and twangy American voice, blasting thrash metal from an old cassette deck. I didn't like him, but I didn't complain. My Vargas cousins said in California, workers stood on street corners hoping for trucks to come by so they could work for $10 a day. We drove north, through neighborhoods where the houses were mansions, the lawns smooth like golf courses on TV. Streets were empty, except for trucks loaded with landscaping equipment, mowers, blowers, trimmers, rakes, workers who were brown. We parked in the driveway of a big house. By the front door was a fountain where two stone fish spit water from their mouths. Maurice said this was a bath for birds, dipped his hands and wiped them on his jeans, so I did the same. We entered the garage. It clattered open when he swiped a plastic card, and the door inside was opened by a maid. Dressed in uniform, black dress with white lace collar and white apron, like she was out of some movie, and black shoes nice enough for church. She looked like Mommy's age. The room was full of closets, with a shiny wood floor, bigger than any of the five bedrooms in my house. Maurice said this was a mud room. I laughed. I thought of my hometown, Martez, where entire houses became mud rooms whenever it rained too hard. Maurice took off his coat and gave it to the maid. She handed us crumpled blue hairnets. I thought only cooks at restaurants wore these, but I put it on my head. Maurice snorted. He slipped his over his shoes. "This one is fresh off the boat," said the maid. I hated the way she laughed, high and thin, like I was lower than donkey shit. We walked on thick plastic floor mats up the stairs, then down a long hallway to a bathroom. It was about the size of the mudroom, with blue-flowered wallpaper, white floor tiles. A gold mirror hung on the wall above the sinks. Maurice handed me a sledgehammer, pointed to the tub. "Does it leak?" I said. He laughed. "Come on, Hermano!" Dropped his plastic glasses over his face. Then he climbed inside, took the sledgehammer from my hands, raised it high over his head. "Stand back," he said. "This baby's cast iron." He slammed the hammer into the middle of the tub. The whole house shook. My ears rang. "Now that," he grinned, "is satisfying." I tried to copy what Maurice had done, but it took me 6 tries to make 1 serious dent. For the rest of the day, I pounded away at the tub and the tiles and the walls. I learned this work was called updating. To smash a tub to put in another tub. But it didn't feel good. I didn't understand the destruction of perfectly good things. The day was 8 hours long. At exactly 5 o'clock, we stopped, so the neighbors wouldn't complain. By then, all that was left was loose wires poking out of studs. Whole room was in pieces, dumped in trash cans. We hauled them to the truck. "So, what'd you think?" said Maurice. I poked at a splinter in my palm. He grabbed it, dug with his fingernail, sucked and spit the thing out. "Next time wear thicker gloves," he said. Push some bills into my hand. It was less than I was expecting, but I nodded. Got home, and I got straight into the shower. My hair was stiff with dust. The spray of water released pain from my body. I felt the hurt in my hands, my shoulders, my back, my lungs. When I spit or sneezed or coughed, it came up black. By her 8th month of pregnancy, Lucia walked like a duck, feet pointed out, one hand on her back like an old lady. Her t-shirts outlined the shape of her breasts, but no longer stretched to cover her belly. She took special care to sleep on her left side, one pillow between her legs, 3 tucked around her like a nest. I was squeezed to the edge of the mattress, tried not to roll to the floor. She walked to the butcher to buy special meats, rode the train all the way into Chinatown to buy special herbs, boiled everything in a special clay pot with a curved wooden handle and spout. My Vargas cousins complained about the smell. Ay, chica, let me guess. Today's specialty is dead dog, said Susie, holding her nose. Wet dead dog, said Hector. Chinese people eat cats, said Carlos. I saw it on TV. That's disgusting, said Hector. Is it true? Said Susie. Oh, yes, said Lucia. Dog penis is a great delicacy. You mean you've tried it? Susie shrieked, stuck out her tongue. No, said Lucia, but I would. I don't see how it's any different from eating cow or pig or anything else.
Pig, said Carlos.
This, said Lucia, is pig's feet. She pulled a bloody hoof from its brown paper wrapping, waved it in the air. It takes 6 weeks to prepare this soup. She put the pig's feet in her clay pot, along with a tub of black vinegar and a huge pile of ginger. She would boil the sludge once every morning and let it sit on the stove all day. In China, all mothers make this for their daughters, she said, to drink after the baby's birth. But you are American, I said.
Cabrón, said Susie.
Smartass, don't listen to him. Susie was 18, the youngest in the house, just a kid. Carlos said she escaped from a pimp in some beach town near Esmeraldas, but I wasn't sure if I believed him. Most nights, she washed dishes at the Peruvian restaurant by the train station. Some days, she cleaned houses with a service. She took an English class at the community center, too. Lucia had started helping with her assignments. The two of them sat at the kitchen table after dinner, Lucia kneeling on her chair, head bent over Susie's notebook, as Susie wrote her essays by hand. Sometimes I heard them laughing, snorting like donkeys, acting like they were sisters. One night, Susie came back from work, panting, hardly able to breathe. She said a man had followed her all the way up the hill from the station to Main Street, tried to grab her by her hair. I beat his hand, she said, staring at her own like it was a diseased object.
Good, said Lucia. I said maybe she shouldn't wear those shoes with the ridiculous skinny heels.
Lucia told me to go away. She made Susie sit, hang her head between her legs. Breathe, she said, patting Susie's back. She made her rinse her mouth out with warm beer. The next night, Susie said to me, Does Lucia have family? Why do you ask? I said. It's a secret, she said. Come on, I said. She frowned. Does she have any friends? You know, girlfriends? Is this some kind of game? Susie pouted. She was pretty, even though her eyes were slightly too small and too far apart, her nose too wide and too flat. But her body was tight, with those curvy hips, a perfect heart-shaped ass. She always wore her denim jacket over a miniskirt, and when she walked in those heels, it was like her body was trying to catch up to her head. A baby giraffe, said Lucia. Still, I could see why guys were hot for her. Can you keep a secret? She said. Susie had decided to throw a baby shower for Lucia. She made a cake with pink frosting, spread confetti on the table, strung up crepe paper streamers, and hung balloons from the ceiling fan. Invited Celia and Ruth, our Vargas cousins who were hardly ever around, and Betty, her sister, and Mrs. Gutierrez, who put on a red and white striped house dress for the occasion. Lucia was surprised. She blinked her eyes, rubbed her belly with both hands. She pulled ribbons off of presents, onesies and bibs, yellow pajamas with duck feet. The clothes, so small. A set of plastic bottles. From Mrs. Gutierrez, a bouncy chair that played tinny classical music. It's Mozart, said Lucia. From Susie, a teddy bear and a pink hooded fleece jacket with ears. Gracias, hermanita, said Lucia. They hugged, cheek to cheek. I called Mommy after the party. Have you asked her, hijo? She said. It's not so simple, I said. The truth was, I couldn't tell if Lucia loved me. Wasn't sure if I loved her. Mommy never talked about love. Love is so American, she would have said. I hadn't brought up the papers again, and I hadn't yet told Lucia about Mommy's greatest wish, for Freddy to come to America to live with us and get his operations. It wasn't that I wanted to keep it from her, but I also wasn't ready to burden her with the hopes of so many. Our baby was born with a round face and dark curls and two eyes like lying down teardrops. Wrinkled, red, and angry, she arched her back and shook her fists, screeched like this world was bloody torture. I could see Lucia was alarmed. "Is she all right?" she asked the nurse. The nurse bundled the baby in a blanket, put her in Lucia's arms, and immediately the body went limp. Her head rolled to one side, eyelids fluttered. She yawned like a cat. Lucia and I laughed. I inspected her ears, her hands, her fingers, her toes, each tiny part perfectly formed. We named our daughter Esperanza Silvia Bach. Esperanza. Hope. Silvia, for my mother. Bach, Lucia's name. I was afraid to have her name connected to mine. We called her Essie for short. We spent 2 days together in the hospital room. It felt protected, like we were inside the cocoon. "We are a family now," I said, "a beautiful family." The nurses brought us everything, blankets and water and juices and ice, and meals we ordered from a menu, like at a restaurant. They changed Esperanza's diapers, checked her weight and pulse, handed us a rubber pacifier when she cried. When Lucia slept, I held the baby, watched soccer on a television suspended from the ceiling, ESPN2. Never thought a hospital could be like this. I wanted to stay forever. My Vargas cousins welcomed us at the house. Susie strung up yellow and white streamers, hung balloons. Carlos brought back a huge pot of spicy goat stew from the Ecuadorian buffet. We made rice and beans and sopa de pollo with cilantro. It felt like home. When Essie was 1 week old, we took her to see a doctor at the Main Street family practice, between the barbershop and the Korean grocery. In the waiting room, Lucia filled out forms with the baby's name and our names, and her birthday and our birthdays, and landlords and employers and important contact information. She could see all the papers made me nervous. A woman came and shook my hand. Her name tag said, Dr. Vera Wang. "Isn't that the name of a supermodel?" I said. "Fashion designer," said Lucia. "Famous for her wedding dresses." "When will you ask her, hijo?" I fidgeted, annoyed. I didn't want mommy in my head just then. Dr. Vera Wang made me nervous, too. The way she cooed and spoke with exaggerated gestures. She weighed our baby on the scale, measured her length, listened to her heart and lungs, checked her hips, counted 10 fingers and 10 toes. "She's perfect. Congratulations," she said. When we returned home that day, Lucia swept and mopped the entire house, top to bottom, while carrying our baby in a sling. She sang while she changed Essie's diapers. "Toe bone connected to the foot bone connected to the heel bone connected to the ankle bone connected to the shin bone. All the bones. Then a Chinese lullaby." "So she will have a Chinese brain," she said. I wasn't sure what that meant. My Vargas cousins were happy that the house smelled like lemons instead of wet dog. The next morning, I found her on her knees in the kitchen, swatting under the refrigerator with the mop handle. "I found this," she said. "See?" She placed 2 small husks in my palm. They were brown, brittle, waxy, semi-transparent. Weighed almost nothing. "Roach skins," she said. What the hell? That's disgusting, I shouted. I threw them to the floor. They shed, she said. They spread disease. She wet a sponge in the sink, bent down, carefully started to wipe the floor. I'm going out, I said. It was Sunday. She didn't look up. When I returned, she was in the bathroom, scrubbing the tub with a toothbrush. Bleach, she said. We need more bleach. Looks clean to me, I said. She didn't answer. Continued to scrub like she was on a mission. Come on, let's go for a walk, I said. I took the toothbrush from her hand. I dressed Essie in her pink fleece hoodie with ears, snapped her in her stroller. We walked past the laundromat, the barber shop, the Korean grocery, turned the corner by the Dominican bar, walked down the hill, past the train station, through the empty parking lots usually filled with commuters' cars, onto the path alongside the rocky pier. It was windy, warm, one of those freak days in January when the air is comfortable, but the banks of the Hudson are still frozen. I put my arm around Lucia, my girl. I felt good. Instead of my usual slouch, I stood a little taller. We walked toward the playing fields where I saw my friends, Mike and Jose and Santiago. Everyone was out today. Hey, Manny, they called. How come we never see you anymore? They ran over, thumping the icy ground with their cleats. I used to play soccer every Sunday after church, some Saturdays, some evenings too. Suddenly, I felt self-conscious. I sucked in my gut. In spite of the labor I did with Maurice, I knew I was getting fat. I've been busy. I pointed to Essie. She was sleeping. Felicitaciones, they said. That's great, man. Hey, you gotta come back out soon. Sure, I said. You hear about Jimmy Prieto? Said Mike. Jimmy Prieto was a friend of ours, a Mexican, and popular because he always volunteered to play goalkeeper. Busted, said Jose. What do you mean? I said. Take it away, deportado, back to the beach. I felt sick to my stomach. Mrs. Gutierrez was always telling us these stories. Down by the Texas border, they dumped Mexicanos in the desert without food or water. They took away the little scraps of paper scrawled with their relatives' phone numbers, left them with nothing. What happened? I said. Broken taillight, said Mike. Estúpido, said Jose, waving his hands. Pay stubs, double stupid, said Santiago. They wanted $5,000 just to post bond. I wasn't sure what that meant. He's got a kid, a boy, said Jose. My throat hurt. How do you know? They shrugged. Everybody knows, said Mike. My spine tingled, like a rope of ice. Lucia and I continued on the winding path until we reached the playground. We sat on a metal bench. Our bebita napped in her stroller. The sun warmed my face. The waves of the Hudson bounced and sparkled, quietly lapped the shore. I stopped thinking about Jimmy Prieto. I watched the bigger babies in bucket swings and the even bigger babies climbing steps, and then the ones who were not babies anymore. They were boys and girls jumping off slides. Our baby couldn't sit up, couldn't bring her hand to her mouth, couldn't steady the weight of her own head. She could not even focus her eyes yet. But she peed. She drooled. She sucked. She breathed. She was alive. And she was mine. I went to work with Maurice when he needed me. Demolition, mostly in the suburbs. A basement, a small bookstore to be converted into a Taco Bell, an old shed we tore down easily with our hammers and hands. Maurice let me help his nephew with the painting of the bathroom at the Scarsdale house. After 2 months, he'd finally finished the update, installed porcelain sinks with marble tops, a jacuzzi tub, sconce lights, a white marble floor that warmed your feet. We painted the walls a deep purple. Shit, said the nephew.
It was his favorite word.
Shit, all that work and it's like taking a shit in an eggplant.
But I thought he looked pretty good. Evenings, I watched my baby discover her tiny mouth, her tiny hands, her tiny toes. Lucia dressed her in pink and yellow, gave her baths every night in the kitchen sink, boiled water in a kettle to make milk from powder. Every 3 hours, she got up to feed her and burp her and sing to her, bounced on a big green exercise ball until Essie fell back to sleep. One night, Lucia dropped the kettle and burned herself. Next morning, the skin on her fingers turned black. She cried for more than an hour.
"It's okay, tranquila," I said. "Do you see this?"
She held out her hand.
"Put ice on it. It's dead skin. Dead. It will never grow back."
She cried again, wrapped her hand in a wet face cloth, wrapped the wet cloth in plastic wrap. That afternoon, Hector suggested a barbecue. Sunday, NFL playoffs, and all our Vargas cousins were home. We threw steak tips and onions and peppers on the charcoal grill. It was freezing out on the back porch, but I warmed my hands on the fire. It felt kind of American. I took a plate of food up to Lucia. She shook her head.
"You're not hungry?"
She poked at the meat with a fork. "It's all burnt," she said. I went back to the kitchen. Everyone was already huddled around the TV. A referee threw a yellow flag.
"What's encroachment?" said Serge.
"When they don't throw the ball fast enough," said Carlos.
"That's delay of game," said Hector.
None of us really knew. A few minutes later, Lucia walked in. Her eyes were red. She didn't look at us. She switched off the television.
"What are you doing?"
I said.
"Electromagnetic waves are bad for the baby," she said.
The baby was sleeping upstairs. I could feel my Vargas cousins staring in disbelief, waiting to see my reaction. My hands shook as I switched the game back on.
"Don't do that," she said.
"You're tired," I said. I herded her out of the kitchen, had to drag her up the stairs. That night, she cried herself to sleep. When I woke in the middle of the night, she was still crying. She wore socks over her hands like mittens.
"Are you cold? Why are you crying?"
But she wouldn't answer. She looked pale. I thought she might be sick. I offered to change diapers, to get up at night and make milk from powder.
"There are bugs crawling on my body when I sleep," she said.
She lay on her back, staring up at her banana plants. "I can't stand the crying."
"No one is crying," I said.
Essie was swaddled, asleep in her bassinet.
"They are coming to take my baby away," she said.
"No one is coming," I said. But I didn't like the sound of her words. One day, I came home, and our baby had tiny cuts on her face. I rubbed Vaseline on her cheeks, clipped her tiny fingernails. Lucia sat on her knees in the middle of the futon mattress.
"Why aren't you happy? Why are you crying?" I asked.
"They're talking," she said. "Manny, I miss Ecuador."
"Please, Lucia," I said. "Come have some breakfast. Hector's making pancakes."
"I'm not hungry," she said. Later, I brought her a plate of pancakes.
"Lucia," I said, "Essie would like to see you."
I set the plate on the floor, held out the baby, whose face was puffy from crying.
"Not now," said Lucia.
She shook her head, sat cross-legged on top of her hands.
"She needs a diaper," I said.
"You do it," she said. "Television is not good for her." That weekend, she stayed in her room at the top of the stairs, watching infomercials, volume all the way loud. She came out only to go downstairs to the kitchen, filled a small bowl with pig's feet soup,
took the bowl back up to her room. I didn't know what to do. I brought Essie down to Carlos's room, the smallest one on the first floor, closest to the kitchen. Before I moved upstairs with Lucia, I'd shared this room with him. It had red-brown shag carpet, flowery paper on the walls above the wainscoting. I had just learned this word, wainscoting, from Maurice. Dirty laundry rested in a heap on the mattress. I put a towel on the floor, put Essie on the towel, let her suck on my pinky finger until she fell asleep. I pushed aside Carlos's clothes, lay back, stared up at the peeling paint. Splotchy brown rings circled the ceiling light, like giant coffee stains. I couldn't recall if it was like that before. And then I remembered. The piece of paper. The one Lucia's sister had placed in my hand. I dug through my wallet, pulled it out. I studied it a long time until I'd memorized the numbers. But I couldn't bring myself to call. Mindy Griffin's voice floated from the TV in our kitchen. Three newborn puppies abandoned in a dumpster. Brutality charges against a veteran police officer. A young couple injured in a hit and run. Just the other day, Mrs. Gutierrez told us six people on Cedar Street were taken during a raid. Drogas, she said. Colombianos. My Vargas cousins were on edge. I understood. It worried them when outsiders got involved. Susie said this happened to women sometimes. Postpartum depression, she said. She was proud to use these words. How would you know? I asked. She has a hole inside her, gigante, where the baby used to be. Boom, bam, she clapped loudly. You think a body can take this, like it's nothing? How can a woman be fine like this? I'd never given it a thought. Like being pregnant, it was what women did. I don't know how to fix such a hole, I said. First, you need to be kind, she said. I was being scolded by a child. Her sister, Betty, lived in Pleasantville, had three daughters of her own. Susie asked her to come. Together they scoured and scrubbed every corner of the bathroom, filled the tub with smelly water, bathed Lucia in herbs. Calendula, plantain leaf, sea salt, Betty explained. Patted her with a towel warmed with a hairdryer, tied a wide, stiff band of cloth around her waist. This is custom for new mothers, to wear the faja. They combed her dark, wet hair. Lucia looked fresh. We sat in the kitchen, drinking tea. Do you feel better now? I said. She nodded. Betty patted her hand. What is that smell? She said. She wrinkled her nose, turned to me, like I was automatically the offensive one. What? I said. Oh, that, said Susie. You mean the wet dog? Why are you looking at me? I said. It's the soup, said Susie. Right, Lucia? She smiled, showed dimples I'd never noticed before. Susie, she could be a sweet girl sometimes. She wanted to make things right. Esperanza talks to me, said Lucia. Yeah? She only screams at me, I said. I was trying to make her laugh. A mother knows her baby's cries, said Betty, from the womb. As if on cue, we heard Essie crying. I stood to go upstairs. Oh, Manny, said Lucia, grabbing my arm. She's tricky. She says she's just fooling around. Tricky, I said. Her face, stiff with concentration, made me uncomfortable. Yes, said Lucia. She communicates telepathically. We heard Essie resume her screaming. Betty brought her down. Her pajama is completely wet, she said. I felt sick, ashamed. My throat was dry, my tongue stuck to the roof of my mouth. The room started to spin. I took my daughter from Betty, grabbed tight on the railing as I brought her upstairs. I wiped her, changed her, wedged her floppy limbs into a clean long-sleeved onesie, fumbled with the too many small snapping buttons. When I returned to the kitchen, Susie and Betty were busy peeling potatoes to make locro de papa, potato soup. I sat, holding my daughter in my lap, glanced sideways at Lucia, who was still sipping her tea quietly. Chinita scared me now. I couldn't understand what was happening inside her head.
"Don't do that," she said. "Don't try to control me."
I felt in control of nothing. I didn't know what to say. Finally, I said, "Babies are not tricky." That night, the telephone rang. I picked it up. It was Mommy.
"Feliz cumpleaños," she said.
"What?"
100 days old," she said. "I learned it is Chinese custom to celebrate, no? How is my nieta?"
"Fine."
"And Lucita?"
"Fine," I lied.
"You are lucky, hijo," she said.
26 years old and a father, a man. Why are you not asking her to be married?" I didn't know what to say. I thought of my brothers, Ricky and Juan, that day on the boat in Canoa, before Freddy had even been born. Suddenly, all I wanted was to see them again.
"I have to tell you something, hijo." "Hello? Are you there?"
"What, ma?"
"It's about Freddy. He is not so well.
His heart, his lungs, he is coughing all the time. He cannot get enough air." The words jumbled somewhere between my ears. "I'm sorry, Mommy. I can't talk right now. I have to go." I hung up the phone. 1 week later, I came home and our baby was lying on the floor, naked and covered in shit. Lucia sat at the kitchen table, dressed in her bathrobe, socks on her hands. She sipped her pig's feet soup.
"Jesus Christ," I whispered.
I ran to my daughter, took her up in my arms, sprayed her down in the kitchen sink. I cleaned her with wet napkins. Her face, her hands, her feet, her body. I dried her with a dish towel. Lucia sat, motionless.
"What?" she said.
I felt dizzy. Hot rage shot up my throat. I walked over to the stove.
"What are you doing?" she said.
I didn't know. But then, I was picking up Lucia's precious clay pot by its curved handle. I smashed it on the floor. Lucia screamed. The baby cried. I felt clammy, hot, and cold. My throat tightened. Neck greased with sweat. Lucia stayed sitting, didn't move. I knelt by her chair, grabbed her shoulders, leaned in so she could feel my breath on her face.
"Basta! Enough of this shit!"
My voice cracked.
"What in hell kind of mother are you?"
I moved back into my old room, the one I used to share with Carlos. Carlos moved in with Celia on the second floor. I brought down Essie's bassinet, stuck it in the only place it would fit, between the head of the mattress and the wall. I boiled water to make milk from powder. I woke every 3 hours to feed her and burp her and rock her back to sleep. In the morning, the skin on the inside of my cheek was swollen. My jaw hurt when I spoke. I prayed to God. I asked him to explain to me what was happening to Lucia. Susie asked her sister to help. Betty agreed to look after the baby during the days. "Betty is responsible," I said. "She is very good with babies."
"No one takes my baby," said Lucia.
She planted herself on the kitchen floor next to Essie, who gurgled in her Mozart bouncy chair.
"You don't take care of her," I said.
"No one."
"Please be reasonable."
My throat hoarse.
"I am her mother," Lucia folded her arms. "Óyeme, mujer," I said loudly. "You can't even take care of yourself. I gave birth to her. Did you give birth to her? Did you carry her and grow her for 9 months? You sit all day with the TV on. You said TV isn't good for her.
I am her mother, she repeated. No one will take my baby.
I punched the wall.
Mani, cried Susie. My knuckles hurt. I bit my cheek. I reached down for Essie. Lucia slapped my arm away. She scowled, lips tight, body stiff like an angry animal. I will call the police, she said. I hated her. Susie knelt. She held Lucia's hand. Until you feel better, she said. Only until you feel better. Until you get some rest, Mama. Right now, it is too much. You need to rest. You will feel better soon. Lucia's face softened. Finally, she agreed. Every morning, she dropped off Essie at Betty's house, picked her up in the late afternoon, kept her clean until I got home from work. It was all I asked. One Saturday, Lucia disappeared late morning and didn't come back until 9 o'clock at night.
Where have you been? I asked.
Gardening, she said. She often wore her padded green gardening gloves, even at home.
Where have you been?
Working, I said. Oh, yes, she said. Gardening is a lot of work. I'm tired now. It was snowing out. Every evening, I gave Essie her bottle. I rocked her, sang to her, lay her in her bassinet. When she was asleep, I went to the bathroom to take my shower. One night, Susie was there, wearing two towels, one around her waist, the other on her head. Her breasts were full, her nipples wet and stiff. "Oh," was all she said. She blushed, but she didn't move. I couldn't resist. I unraveled the towels. She was soft and smooth and smelled like cocoa and rose perfume. I brought her to my room, closed the door. I combed her wet hair with my fingers. She put her mouth around my penis, dug her fingernails into my thighs. I struggled to keep quiet. I rocked my hips, thrusting harder and harder, waiting for her to stop me. But she didn't, not even when she gagged. And then I no longer worried about Lucia, lying with her banana plants just 2 floors above, or Esperanza, sleeping miraculously through my cries. I closed my eyes and saw sheetrock crumbling, collapsing pipes, the splintering of marble tiles. After, Susie massaged my back, my shoulders. She kissed my lips and blew life into my lungs. "Someone needs to take care of you, mi amor," she said. I immediately straddled her from behind. Next day, I couldn't look at her. When she spoke to me shyly, I grunted or pretended not to hear. But I lay awake late, listened for her footsteps, heels clicking on the kitchen floor. She got in after midnight, smelled like sweat and soap, deep fry oil and rose perfume. "Come," I said. I knew it was wrong, but I undressed her quickly. I locked my bedroom door. One morning, a week later, Lucia came down from her room. Her hair was combed. She wore pink lipstick, silver earrings, a red sweater, and white lace gloves. "Smells good in here," she said. Hector was making pancakes. She smiled, eyes shiny. "I'm taking Essie to the doctor," she said. "Why?" "3-month checkup. Don't you remember?" She scooped Esperanza from her bouncy chair, carried her upstairs. The chair continued to chime. I wanted to kick it. Mozart was getting on my nerves. When she came back into the kitchen, Essie was dressed in a yellow sweater, black and white striped leggings, a yellow bow tied in her hair. "My bumblebee!" Lucia threw a burp cloth over her eyes. "Where's my bumblebee?" she cooed. Essie pulled it off, and then she smiled. My baby's first real smile. She looked so much like her mother. "Do you want to come?" said Lucia. "I have to work," I said, but I smiled at her as encouragingly as I could. Remember the first time we went to the family practice? Now I was just glad to see Lucia dressed. Maybe she was feeling better at last. I reached over to squeeze her shoulders. She slipped away, hummed. I stepped outside to wait for Maurice, pressed on my eyelids with my fingers. While I waited, I prayed to God. I prayed for Lucia. I prayed for forgiveness. I swore I would never touch Susie again. "You're working hard, Manny," said Mrs. Gutierrez. She waved to me with her broom. "Good morning," I said. "You hear about the barbershop?"
"No."
"Burned. No more." She threw up her hands. I could smell the smoke in the middle of the night. Mrs. G always slept with her windows open, even in the dead of winter. In summer, we could hear her snore. Jesus Christ, no way. I sniffed the air, but all I caught were lingering hints of Susie's sex and rose perfume. "Was anyone hurt?"
"All okay," said Mrs. G.
"Sure, okay, but completely ruined." That day, Maurice brought me to a new house, the biggest one I'd ever seen. Built like a castle, all gray stones with towers and spires. Iron gates opened to a circular driveway and another fountain, this one with naked angels spraying water from their penises.
"Rich people," said Maurice.
"Crazy bastards," I said. Guilt or no guilt, fire or no fire, I was in a damn good mood. Maurice led the way through a maze of long hallways and stairs. We were headed to the guest wing of the house. "Another bathroom?" I said.
"You think there's something better?" said Maurice.
I shook my head. I hadn't meant it like that. One time, I did a trailer park demo, found a dead lady buried under her cats. No joke. He laughed like this was hilarious. This bathroom was connected to a bedroom with a bed that was wider than it was long. I figured an entire family could sleep in that bed, including tíos and tías and cousins. Everything in the bathroom was white except for the black marble floor tile. Double porcelain sinks with sleek faucets, white marble countertops, sconced lights that were shaped like flowers. It looked a lot like the one we had just finished installing at the other house, except the other one was purple. "This is for updating too?" I said, confused.
"No,"
said Maurice, slapping the hammer into my hands. "This, my man, is for style." This time, it took me only 2 tries to break open the tub. By late morning, I was ripping up the floor tiles with a crowbar. For lunch, we sat on the bed of the truck. I snapped open my carton of rice and beans. It felt good to be outside, even with the chilly wind.
"You got a girl?"
Maurice asked. "Yes," I said, but I was not sure why he would ask. It made me feel suspicious. When he chewed, I could see pieces of meatball in his mouth.
"How long?"
"3 months old." Maurice looked at me funny. Then he burst out laughing.
"Aw, shit, man. You have a girl, like a kid. I meant girlfriend, chica, you know?"
"Oh,
so you're married?"
I didn't answer.
"Aw, shit, you knocked her up."
I felt hot.
"Don't feel bad, kid."
Maurice laughed. "Women know how to get what they want." Late afternoon, he came to check on me. I was sweeping up, resealing the plastic on the doorways with blue tape.
"It's for you."
He held out his cell phone.
"What?"
I couldn't imagine who would find me on Maurice's number. I took the phone from his hand.
"Mr. Vargas?"
It was a woman's voice. American.
"This is Mr. Vargas."
I felt strange addressing myself by that name, This is Dr. Vera Wang from Family Practice.
My baby, I said. My heart beat faster. Esperanza.
Esperanza is fine, perfect, but it's your wife, Lucia.
She's not my wife. I could hear the doctor cough, then cover her cough with her hand.
Lucia needs help, she said.
Our family helps us, our cousins. I thought of Susie, her dimpled moon face, the curve of her hips, her heart-shaped ass.
Mr. Vargas, I don't think you understand, said the doctor. Lucia is not well. She needs medical attention, serious attention. The baby is not to be left alone with her.
I was silent. My tongue like stone, the phone like a brick.
But where?
I finally said.
The emergency room, she said. If Lucia does not get proper help, I will have to call CPS.
CPS? I did not understand.
Child Protective Services.
I'm sorry. It's the law. She hung up.
I still didn't understand. Couldn't think straight. I wanted to ask what just happened, where Essie was now, what Lucia had said or done. I knew Child Protective Services could take children away. I didn't know if they involved police.
Maurice was outside, checking the debris chute set up at the back of the house.
You look like shit, he said.
My entire body felt rubbery and damp. I sat down on the pavement.
Come on, he said. Let's get you home.
He drove fast. I asked him to slow down. When I stepped out of his truck, I knew right away something was wrong at the house. Even from the street, I could see lights on inside. This was never the case, since the windows were kept covered with blankets. I walked up the gravel path to the front entrance, tapped the door, which we always kept locked. It swung open.
Hello?
I said. I peeked my head in. Las cucarachas. Cockroaches. They lay everywhere, scattered by the refrigerator, ringing the sink, clogging the drain, dead on their bellies or flipped onto their backs. Spiny legs squirming uselessly in the air. Must have been hundreds, all sizes, shiny and fat like beetles,
narrow and spindly with long antennae still moving, just barely, so the linoleum floor seemed to writhe.
I tiptoed and hopped to avoid their dark oval bodies. They crunched like crackers under my boots. They'd come out of cupboards, closets, floorboards, walls, come out from hiding to die. From the hallway, I peered into the first floor bathroom. A handful floated in the toilet. A few lay lifeless under the sink.
Jesus, I said.
Essie. I ran to my room. The bassinet was empty, except for the green pacifier we'd brought home from the hospital. I ran three flights of stairs to Lucia's room. Two of the bugs lay at angles on top of the comforter, neatly covering her mattress, as motionless as if they had never lived. I ran downstairs, outside, puked. Mrs. Gutierrez had appeared on her front stoop. She sat, broad and bulky from all the layers she wore under her terry cloth robe. When she saw me, she smiled and waved excitedly. I walked to her, saw she held a baby in her arms. My baby, Esperanza, bundled in a yellow blanket, asleep.
You see, I told you I would take care of things, she said. I called the health department, and that asshole Harry finally got the place fumigated. Finally.
Where is Lucia? I said.
No sé, she shrugged. She brought Esperanza to me, and she left. You want to wait for her? I can make you a cup of tea.
No, thank you, I said. I grabbed Esperanza. I would not have my baby staying in that disgusting house. I walked 5 miles to Betty. Walked 5 miles back. By then, Hector and Susie had come home. Together we swept and mopped and sprayed and wiped. We opened every door, every closet, every drawer in the house.
We hunted dead roaches until every last bug was gone. Then I remembered about CPS. I went upstairs to wait for Lucia. She had covered her television with a batik cloth. I lay on her mattress, looked up at her banana plants. When I woke, it was 3 a.m. I went downstairs, climbed into bed with Susie. Lucia didn't come back that night, or the next night, or the next. I worried. I took out the folded-up piece of notebook paper. It was dirty, creased. I didn't know what to do. Still, I was reluctant to call. "But what if something terrible has happened?" said Susie. "She's an American," I said. "She could be hurt," said Susie. "Maybe she's in Ecuador," I said. And for a moment, I filled with hope. It was possible. It could be true. "Or murdered," said Susie. Her eyes widened. "Don't be ridiculous," I said. "You watch too much TV." She could be such a child. But I was afraid. Anything was possible. "You must call." "If you don't call, I will call," said Susie. She grabbed a piece of paper out of my hands, pulled out her brand new flip phone. "Miranda Bach," she said. And then she was no longer a child. She was serious. She went into the kitchen. I sat on the mattress. It sagged. I thought about how it had been in this room before I moved in, and before Carlos, Juno, and before Juno, Tina and Robbie, and before them, who knew who else? Who knew how long it had been sitting here, with its tired springs and stains, its sad life of its own? Just as I lay down, I heard Susie's footsteps marching back. "It's Lucia's sister," she said, handing me the phone. "Lucia is in the hospital." The words came at me in a stream that hardly made sense. Postpartum and schizo and history. History of this, history of that. "She's sick." And then, "None of us want to involve Child Protective Services." CPS, I understood that. "Should I go to see her?" I asked. There was a long silence. "Please take care of Esperanza," said Lucia's sister. "I'm sorry. I know this is a difficult situation. I promise I will call when there is more news." The words swirled in my head. All night, all day. Lucia's past, this history, these behaviors that had complicated names. Night came again, but I couldn't sleep. I wrapped Essie in a fleece blanket, strapped her to my body in a sling, stepped outside. The wind howled, but I felt strangely calm, welcomed the snow on my face. Most of Main Street was closed, dark behind metal gates. The barber shop was boarded up, but the smell of smoke and burned plastic remained. Only the laundromat churned with its bright yellow glare. I stood by the glass door, propped open to let in air, even in the dead of night. I stared for a while, hypnotized by the sounds of thumps and bumps and scrapes, the sizzling hum of fluorescent lights. As I turned to leave, I slipped on a clear patch of ice, nearly fell. Essie didn't stir. Inside the ice, cigarette butts frozen inside. The sight made my stomach churn. I spotted El Pollo Loco walking on the opposite side of the street. I thought to wave, but when he saw me, he stopped, took up private conversation with a parking meter. I walked past the Ecuadorian buffet, the Korean grocery, the Dominican bar playing bachata. Thought to go in, but I liked how the cold air was clearing my head. I felt light, almost empty. Then I felt sad, then guilty, then dizzy with strange relief. I realized I was no longer worrying about Lucia. She had others to take care of her now. "Hijita, I will take care of you," I whispered to Essie. Felt the heat of her cheek on my chest. Her long, dark lashes caught the snow. I zipped up my jacket, shielded her from the wind.